Welcome to Coffee Table Mythos. I'm Eliza.
And I'm Leah.
For our new listeners, where can they find us?
Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, coffeetablemythos@gmail.com, anchor.fm, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. How can they support us?
By liking, following, sharing, subscribing, and reviewing our podcast. Reviewing our podcast helps others find us so that our family can grow. Come interact with us.
You can use our hashtag CoffeeTableMythos to show us your cool art of the entities we cover. Email us to let us know what you want to hear about. Or message us on Instagram or Facebook. What about merch?
For now, visit us on Teespring at teespring.com/store/coffee-table-mythos for shirts, hoodies, stickers, and more. Leah is testing out prototypes so that we can make our own merch soon. You can also donate to us at anchor.fm/coffee-table-mythos/support. All donations will go to making this podcast better.
And with that,
grab your favorite beverage and let's talk myths.
What you drinking today?
So I'm once again drinking a white Ultra Beast Monster. But what I want to tell you guys about is this, I guess we'll call it kind of like a chocolate instead of like a candy. But they're little balls of chocolate that are hollow inside. And inside the hollow center is coffee.
It's like a little burst of coffee in the middle.
And then the outsides are almost like a dusted chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And they're actually really good. It says you can have 11 pieces per serving, which I haven't even gotten to a full serving yet. I've just been eating them like throughout the day.
Well, it's funny because I went with my sister. She was visiting from Ohio. And we went to the grocery store because that's all I had time to really do with her. And we just started going randomly in the candy aisle, which was a mistake. Because we found, like, Fruity Pebbles candy bar, which I didn't know was a thing until, you know, then. And then we got this, the Copper's Chocolate Iced Coffee Bites. And she...
Oh, yeah. That is the company it's from.
She had one of them, and her face was all, like, scrunched up. And she was like, I'm not a big fan, so I tried one. And I was like, oh, they're not bad. And she was like, you can have these. I do not. I was like, all right, cool.
These are dark chocolate, so they're not super sweet,
mm-mm,
but they're still very good.
They have a bitter taste to them. And I'm drinking Blue Raspberry from Adrenaline Shock Performance. It's all right. It doesn't taste like it has a super bad aftertaste like some of the other ones. Do you want to try it?
I love how I am the aftertaste test goat.
Well,
I love how I said test goat because I couldn't remember the words guinea pig.
The goat.
The aftertaste isn't terrible.
It's not as bad as it is in the other ones. It's been a little rough of a weekend for us, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're about to start the work week. All right. So this was not intentional, but you know how Eliza did Perun from the Slavic folklore, and then the following week I did Morana, at which point Eliza did Quetzalcoatl from the Mesoamerican lore. And now this week, I'm going to talk about Itzpapalot from the same place.
Mesoamerican.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I've had the names for some of these planned out in my outline for a couple weeks, so it only occurred to me while I was typing this up that we've kind of made a chain of mythologies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was yours the first week?
Anansi, which was a request.
Oh, right. Okay.
But before I start, this is your content warning. This half of the episode will include mentions of infant mortality, women dying in childbirth, and gore. Please take care of yourself while listening to this episode, or feel free to skip to the second half if necessary. All right. Everyone where they want to be? Good. Let's talk about Itzpapalot. Itzpapalot is the Mesoamerican teot of childbirth, stillborn babies, mothers that pass during childbirth, punisher of men that cheat on their wives, and war.
Fun.
Her name is spelled Itzpapalotl. In the Nahuatl language, papalot means butterfly, which is why she is sometimes referred to as the obsidian butterfly or the clawed butterfly.
Well, that's pretty.
And it's not obsidian the color, necessarily. It's okay. Obsidian, like obsidian knives, the really sharp stone knives.
Yeah, I figured. Which is why it was like the other one.
Well, you know what? I didn't figure, and I had to find out from research.
I'm sorry.
I'm going, oh, black butterfly, okay. Smarty pants.
She's
gonna,
like, smack me.
While sometimes she is depicted with butterfly wings extending from between her shoulder blades, other times she is depicted with bat wings, as it is possible clawed butterfly actually referred to bats.
Oh, damn.
When she is depicted with wings, the wings are tipped with obsidian blades.
Batwoman.
She is sometimes portrayed as having flowing hair and red and white face paint, while other times she is portrayed as a skeletal woman. Sometimes she has the claws of a jaguar. She can also transform herself into a beautiful woman, an eagle, a deer, or a butterfly. The first thing I want to clarify is that the, quote, gods were not necessarily looked at in that manner. What we today think of as gods or deities is not necessarily how other cultures thought of their spirits, at least until different cultures came up against each other. Itz Papalot is a teot. A teot is an abstract aspect of the divine. In most articles these days, it is translated into English as God, but the way it has been explained to me, they are more similar to the Native American spirits or personifications of nature than to some of the other pantheons of, quote, gods, end quote. She is one of the Tsitsimime, a group of star spirits. This has a lot of S's, and I am so sorry.
Are you saying that to yourself or to me?
Both. That are depicted as skeletal women wearing skirts, sometimes with skulls and bone decorations. I use the term spirits because the internet has translated it as star demons, but this would appear to be from post-conquest descriptions.
Mm.
And we are not going to be demonizing the lady spirits just because some religious conquistadors decided that's what they were.
Bum, bum, bum.
The Tsitsimime were associated with the women who died in childbirth. It's believed that Itz Papalot may be a woman who died in such a way. She was the leader of the Tsitsimime, and she ruled the area of afterlife called Tamo'anshan. It is this place in paradise where those children that died went. There is a tree there that has thousands of nipples to feed the babies.
You've been saying this multiple times this weekend, and every single time it throws me off.
I'm like, you want to hear a fun fact?
This tree has thousands of nipples for babies.
That died, yes. In Aztec culture, in a surprisingly similar belief to Spartans from across the world, women who died in childbirth were similar to men who died in war, and as such went to a specific realm after death. The Tsitsimime were worshipped by women about to give birth and midwives, along with other fertility spirits. But they were also associated with stars, particularly the stars that can be seen around the sun during an eclipse. It was believed at these times of the year, the Tsitsimime could descend to earth and possess or devour men. When there were times of change, like the changeover of the calendar, there was also reason to fear the Tsitsimime, as they could take advantage of that time of instability. She is a teot of the Chichimeca people who were later incorporated into the Aztecs' pantheon. There is a story that was mentioned in part on multiple websites. I found it in length in a performance translation of the Nahuatl language discourse fables from the manuscript of 1558 by Willard Gingrich from Montclair State University in 1998, which you can read in total if you Google the title. For the purpose of this episode, I'll summarize it. There were two-headed deer, and there were also two cloud serpents. The serpents were named Chunel and Mimich, and they were hunters of the sacred lands. The cloud serpents chased the two deers, attempting to kill them. After chasing them all night and all the next day, they were exhausted. They decided to each build a hut not far from each other. The deer transformed into women and approached, calling their names and asking them to come eat and drink with them. When they didn't answer, the women asked them why they didn't respond. The first brother finally said to come to him, and she asked him to drink. He drank the blood, and then they laid down together. She then tore open his chest and devoured his heart. The second brother exclaimed that she had eaten his brother, and the other woman called out, asking him to come eat. He didn't answer, instead lighting a fire and running through it. She pursued him all night and through to noon the next day. When he fell through a barrel cactus, the star spirit fell after him. He turned around and shot her and was able to turn back. He mourned his brother, and the fire tail heard him, so they went to get Itzpapalot. They took her and burned her alive.
Oh no.
First, she turned into blue flint. Then she turned into white flint, which they gathered some into a bundle. Then she turned into yellow flint, then red flint, and then finally black flint. None of these were taken. At this point, the story moves on to another chapter about other characters.
Kind of a bad segue.
Yeah.
And these days, there is all kinds of modern art of her. There are some people that worship her still. It is the name of a vermin type in Final Fantasy XI. Orizaba, from Elena of Avalor, is based on her. She is associated with the Orizaba silk moth found in Mexico, Central, and South America.
Ooh.
And she's in the 9th Anita Blake book, Obsidian Butterfly, by Laurel K. Hamilton. And that is Itzpapalot. I'm a little scared to look at Eliza's face after some of the things I just said. Do you have any questions or concerns?
So speaking of, like, being burned alive,
mm-hmm.
I was just talking to Kat the other day because she was asking, she's like, do you ever think about how you'd prefer to die? And I'm like, not generally, on an everyday basis. And I think, like, she was telling me how she joined the Navy because she thought it would be a really cool backstory. Like, the only two ways she wanted to die was either to die at sea on a sinking ship or to die peacefully in her sleep.
Okay.
Two extremes.
Drowning is a mind fuck.
Yeah.
I hear it's painless, but it absolutely fucks with your head.
Yeah.
Would not be my first choice.
Yeah. But I was like, well, you know, the number one thing I don't want to die of is burning alive, because that just sounds absolutely fucking painful.
Regarding that, I do believe I've read somewhere that most people die of the smoke inhalation before they are actually fully burnt up.
Burnt up, yeah. Still painful, though.
So that's fun.
Still painful.
Yeah.
So that was a crazy whirlwind of a topic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like a really interesting story. I like when I can find the backstories for things. Oh, and regarding that story, the pieces that they use on the multiple websites do not talk about the flint part at the end. They kind of like dot, dot, dot after the part where it says, and the spirit, like, fell after him. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's kind of a... they burned her alive. That's not fun. Mm-mm.
They left the flint part out?
Yeah. So, okay. I only found the whole story on this one guy's translation of a manuscript from 1558.
Okay.
So what most people were using on their websites, like I would go and I'd read the same thing over and over and over on multiple websites. It was just part of that story and they never went all the way to the end.
Okay.
So that was like one whole chapter of his translation. So I took it to the end of the chapter and that's where it was, how she died. It kind of read to me that she then went to the, like, afterlife realms. She's not, like, dead. She's still a spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So, she was just very interesting to read about. All right. And with that, that's Itzpapalot. And we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
And we're back. Okay, so this week I decided to do the Hawaiian goddess Pele.
Sweet.
Also, her full name is actually Pele Hanuamea. She's the goddess of volcanoes and fire, creator of the Hawaiian Islands, and she is referred to as Madame Pele or Tutu Pele as a sign of respect.
Yeah, I'd want to respect someone that could make volcano islands.
Got more reason to. Pele was born from the female spirit named Haumea. Pele is also known as She Who Shapes the Sacred Land, which is what the whole longer name means.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. There is an active volcano on the big island of Hawaii that is called Kilauea, which is still being studied. It is believed that Kilauea is inhabited by a family of fire gods. One of the sisters is Pele, and she is believed to govern Kilauea and responsible for controlling its lava flow. She is also known for her power, passion, jealousy, and capriciousness, and her home is believed to be a fire pit called Hala Mau Mau. I hope I said that right. Could be Mau Mau, but it's at the summit caldera of Kilauea. However, her domain presides over all volcanic activity on the Big Island. For all people listening, I am sorry for my Hawaiian pronunciation. I did live in Hawaii for like 2 years, almost.
Don't ask me number questions.
It's about 2 years. And it's a lot easier speaking the language when you're like adopting their accent.
Mm.
That's what kind of happened with me, and that made it a lot easier for me to communicate. But like being over on the East Coast, my mouth is just like so I'm trying. Okay, so in legend, Pele traveled by canoe from the island of Tahiti to Hawaii.
Like the Tahiti?
Yes. On this journey, she tried to create fires on different islands, but her sister Namaka was chasing her. I'm going to get more into the actual story eventually, but this is like the condensed version. In the end, the sisters fought and Pele was killed.
Oh no.
And although her body was killed, her spirit lives on Kilauea.
Oh good.
Thus the saying that her body is the lava and steam that comes from the volcano. She can also change form, appearing as a white dog, old woman, or beautiful young woman.
Hmm.
Her sister, Hiiaka, is believed to be the first person to dance hula. Many hula dances and chants are dedicated to Pele and her family. With hula dedicated to Pele, the dance usually represents her intense personality and movement of volcanoes. She is rival to the Hawaiian goddess of snow, Paliahu, and her sisters, who mainly live on Mauna Kea, the dormant volcano with snow on the Big Island of Hawaii. And if, for those of you that don't know, yes, there is snow in Hawaii on the Big Island because it's just so high up there from the elevation. There is a myth that Paliahu went with friends from Mauna Kea to attend sled races on the grassy hills south of Hamakua. Pele went disguised as a beautiful stranger and was greeted by Paliahu. In the legend, Pele becomes jealous of Paliahu, and Pele opened caverns of Mauna Kea and threw fire from the caverns toward Paliahu, and Paliahu fled toward the summit.
Okay.
Then Paliahu grabbed her snow mantle and threw it over the mountain. Earthquakes shook the island as the snow mantle unfolded, reaching the fire fountains, chilling and hardening the lava, and driving rivers of lava back to Mauna Loa and Kilauea. Battles later on led to Pele ruling the southern portion and Paliahu ruling the northern portion
of the island.
Yeah. Berries of the ohelo, which is the scientific name is Vaccinium reticulatum, is a sacred plant to Pele. It's also a wild berry on the volcano. Traditionally, prayers and offerings to Pele were made before consuming the berries, and it was considered a slight to just eat the berries without doing so. So don't do it.
Yeah, don't piss off the volcano goddess.
There is an urban legend that Pele occasionally warns locals of impending eruptions in the form of either a beautiful young woman or an elderly woman with white hair, sometimes accompanied by a small white dog and always dressed in a red muumuu. I put a star next to this next one because I actually heard this from some of the locals. Pele is said to walk along roads near Kilauea, but will vanish if passersby stop to help her. The passerby is then obliged to warn others or suffer misfortune in the next eruption. There is also legend of Pele's curse, where her wrath will fall on anyone who removes items from her island. Every year, many small natural items are returned by post to the National Park Service by tourists seeking Pele's forgiveness. It is believed that this is possibly a created myth from the 20th century to prevent tourist depredation.
Yeah.
William Hyde Rice included an 11-page summary of Legends of Pele in his 1923 collection of Hawaiian Legends. A reprint is available online from the Bernice P. Bishop Museum's Special Publications section. Very specific. Bernice. In 2003, the Volcano Art Center held a special Pele painting competition to replace a rendition done in early 20th century by D. Howard Hitchcock. Hitchcock's depiction was widely criticized by Native Hawaiians for the goddess being depicted as blonde and Caucasian. Yes.
Oh my gosh. What is wrong with white people?
I know.
Like, why would an indigenous goddess be white with blonde hair?
Now, the only thing that the immediate thing I thought of, though, was the fact that I actually have a friend that is mostly Hawaiian, who has albinism, and that is why she is a white, blonde hair, blue-eyed, Hawaiian-descended person.
Mm.
And she does talk about it on her Facebook, big advocate for it. And so it's like, at the same time, I'm like, but if she had albinism? But that's not the point. The point is that normally she's depicted as what you would Native think of Hawaiian. As a Native Hawaiian.
And also, if she was supposed to look that way, it would be specified in her stories, mm-hmm. because that is very special.
Extremely. Anyway, the winning painting is found now at the Kilauea Visitor Center and was done by Arthur Johnson of Puna.
Alrighty.
Phenomena connected to volcanism is mainly named after Pele. For example, Pele's hair, Pele's tears, and Limu o Pele, which means Pele's seaweed. A volcano on the, I think it's Jovian moon, Io, is also named Pele. Now I'm going to get to the actual legend that gets a little spicy.
Spicy.
According to legend, Pele seduced her sister Namakao Kakai's husband.
Okay, there was like a pause and I was like, she seduced her sister?
No, her husband. Her sister's husband. And it caused a bit of a fight between the two.
That's fair.
It is said that this led to Pele being banished from Tahiti, and her older brother, Kamohoali, King of Sharks, gave Pele a large canoe, which she took with her brothers, eventually landing at Hawaii. The first landfall was in Kauai, which if you've never been there, it is the Garden Island, and it is gorgeous. Every time Pele tried to make a home in Kauai, however, her sister stopped this from happening, and they would fight. Eventually, Pele escaped to Oahu, where she made fire pits and a crater known as Diamond Head. I have hiked Diamond Head. It is a bit of a hike, but it is worth the view. I will say that much.
Is that the one where Dova had to be carried?
No, that is a different hike. That was a different hike. Dova was not born yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you see this?
No, that is exactly what it's described as. The picture that was put in the... Yeah, that is fucking gorgeous.
The new one. She's holding what looks like a stone or an egg and it has like a baby in it.
Mm-hmm. And then the staff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the staff that makes like the craters and stuff. She then went to Molokai, then Maui, where she made Haleakala volcano. And it was there that the sisters feuded again. And it was like a massive epic battle. And eventually, it led to Pele's godhood, which is when she died. Her physical body died, her spirit lived on. And after being ripped, this was after she was ripped apart by her sister.
That's not fun.
Now, just to specify, her sister was a sea goddess.
Mm-hmm.
And it resulted in Pele digging her final fire pit in Halemaumau crater at the summit of Kilauea, where many believe she resides to this day. And when I was doing my research on it, the reason they believe that she still resides there till this day is because people will take pictures around that area, because there's like a big tourist attraction there,
mm-hmm.
and they'll see pictures of her face in random places. So they're like, oh, Pele's there.
I thought you were going to say they have pictures of a woman in a red muumuu.
Don't know about all that, but... And it was funny because when I first heard that story about the woman just walking around on the side of the road in a red dress, they just called it a red dress when I was listening to the story. It was like a horror Halloween story they were telling me. It's like, oh, be afeard of the woman in red. And I'm like, okay, all nothing but respect. Nothing but respect. Yeah, so it's pretty cool. There's so much lore in the Hawaiian culture. I was having dreams about a lot of volcano lava stuff. So I was like, Pele!
Let's look into it.
Yeah. That's kind of why I chose her. And I also kind of like remembered some of the urban legends from there. Not all, but some.
Well, and I know when you were first telling me that that is who you were going to talk about this week, you mentioned that she is sometimes seen as a white dog, and you're like, Dova's from Hawaii and is a white dog.
Yeah. But then again, she has a lot of brothers and sisters that are also white dogs that live in Hawaii, so.
Yeah, she was a part of a huge litter.
I think it was like 11.
Mm-hmm.
11 puppies. Yeah.
Wasn't she the last litter from that mom?
Yes. She was the last litter from that mom, and... I think she would, like, everyone, when they first saw her, because we did, like, a puppy meetup, they were like, what are you feeding Dova? Because she is so fucking huge in comparison to all of the brothers and sisters. And I was like, I'm just giving her a healthy dose of love and support and all the things. She should be happy today, though. She got stripper meat. She got some nice stripper meat. And when we say stripper meat, we're referring to this place called Chaps in Baltimore. And, like, it's in multiple places in Maryland. Mm. But it's pet beef. And we call it stripper meat because the one in Baltimore City has a strip club next to it. And it doesn't matter which location we're going to, we always call it stripper meat.
Yeah.
Yes. And if anybody is interested, it's like a pit beef place, and it was on Guy Fieri's Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. Mm-hmm. Anyway, good shit. Makes really good food. That's my good thing this week.
Oh, something to brighten the mood?
Yeah.
You're just gonna get ahead of it?
I'm just gonna put that in there. Brighten my mood.
They also do pit ham and pit turkey.
Yeah, we got like, was it 2 pounds of... Well, you can order the meat by the pound. You don't have to just buy the sandwich. Mm-hmm. So you can get like, okay, I want 2 pounds of this type of meat. Take it home. And you can get fries and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
So that was pretty fun. That was my highlight of today. I've had a rough weekend.
That's fair. So my something to brighten the mood, especially after that first half of mine, is that I got an order of tea from this place called Friday Afternoon Teas from Seattle, Washington. Mm-hmm. We are not sponsored, but nope. I bought Eliza 3 different types of tea from them and then one for myself.
I like how she says they're like all for me.
They're 75% for you.
I'm okay with that though, because I like tea.
Yeah. I have a weird relationship with tea. I trick myself into thinking I like tea. I get tea that I think I'll like, and then I end up not liking it.
I'm now drinking tea because...
Her throat started closing up.
It didn't close up. It just felt phlegmy, and it made it hard to breathe. Stop looking at me like that.
So, anyway, Friday's superpower is that words taste like things to her, so she makes tea based on either the words themselves or archetypes or themes to do with the topic. So, for example, one of the teas I got for Eliza is called Badger's Blend, and it's a mix of black tea, lemon peel, and granulated honey.
Have you made that for me yet?
Yes. Pretty sure. Maybe I didn't. Maybe I just opened it and smelled it and made you a different honey tea. Here's the problem. I have 3 different teas from 3 different companies that are all basically black teas with lemon and sweet flavors in them.
Can I have that after this cup?
Yes, I can make you more tea.
She makes the best tea for me. Even if she doesn't drink it, I drink it.
Yeah. So then we got one that was Steven Universe inspired called Giant Woman.
Giant woman, giant woman.
And then one was Alice in Wonderland inspired. And I think that one's called either like Cheshire Smile or something to do with the Cheshire Cat. Mm. And then I got one for myself that was a black tea with cacao nibs and husks for extra caffeine. And that one's called Besos de Cacao, Kisses of Chocolate. And I have been making them in my fancy teapot that my mom got me that I'm partially terrified to use because the porcelain is so delicate, but I'm going to use it anyway because I don't want it to just be sitting on the knickknack shelf anymore.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Now I have that song stuck in my head.
I'm sorry. Anyway, half the time, I have like an outline for each of the researches that I write. And I always put at the bottom something to brighten the mood. And when I'm researching, it's so, like, intense that by the time I get to the bottom, I forget to actually write something. So then when we're recording, I get to the part where it says, literally, something to brighten the mood. And I'm like, fuck, I don't have something off, like, to read. So then I have to come up with one on the spur of the moment. And this time I actually wrote it down because, like, after that first part about Eats Papalot, I was like, that was a little dark. I definitely need to know what I'm going to say.
Just a wee bit.
Because that's not one that we can just be like, oh yeah, that was fine. No, that was dark.
The other thing that brightened the mood is that we've been playing ESO together. We've been doing the endeavors. So last Monday I had off because it was 4th of July weekend. Mm-hmm. And essentially, we were in this long queue just to go and do a dungeon, because that was one of, like, the weekly things. And we're in the dungeon, and there's this, like, it was, like, some kind of word before Thomas. It was, like...
something sketchy? Or, like something that means that.
Yeah, like, sketchy Thomas, or, like, sneaky Thomas. Something like that.
Suspicious Thomas.
I don't remember what it was. Yeah, and... we didn't realize somebody else was, like, actually listening to what we were saying, because we were just thinking we were on the group chat. And I was like, I know a suspicious Thomas. And Leah's like, oh yeah, I know one too. And then I was like, oh, it's my father. And then there's a guy that just goes like, hey guys. And I was like, oh my god.
Whoops.
I just stopped and I was like, someone's listening in on our conversation. I'm gonna just shut up.
ESO's been having really weird microphone issues.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it'll automatically put you on the area chat even if you've disabled it. So you have to intentionally go out. And these people, like, our microphones, mine and yours, mm-hmm. pick up each, like, button click. So you know that our microphones are active because even when we're just not saying anything... It shows the name on the screen.
Yeah.
So their buttons are apparently really quiet, or their microphones suck, because... there were no other names popping up on screen until he actually said something. And I was like, instant anxiety.
Yeah,
I do not do playing with people I don't know unless absolutely necessary.
Yeah, like we have a guild, like with a huge guild hall. Now, if anybody doesn't know what ESO is, it's Elder Scrolls Online. Because we're complete RPG nerds, especially when it comes to the Elder Scrolls saga. And... essentially, we're both werewolves. So the first thing anybody says is like, hey, like, you want to bite us? Like, can we become werewolves? Can you make us werewolves? And we're like, stranger danger.
Seriously, this one guy on a different dungeon was... I was pretending like I didn't have a microphone because he was using language that I curse, right? He was using language I do not appreciate. And he was asking, like, if we could... turn him into a werewolf for the game, because there's like a whole separate quest line and tree, yeah. Like ability line and everything. And I was like, not with that kind of mouth, I won't.
And I basically was just like, yeah, you have to go to this altar and then have someone willing to bite you. But it was not me. I was not willing to bite him.
Or you can purchase it in the store.
Mm-hmm.
You can purchase the start of the quest line.
Yeah. But the person that we talked to when we were talking about like suspicious Thomas or sketchy Thomas, whatever that fucking name was. That guy was really cool. He ended up, like, giving us some tips on, like, stuff we can look for. Because he was essentially trying to just, like, farming this specific dungeon for a specific set of gear.
Yeah.
Which I can respect. And he also, like, in the middle, he went to go talk to his, like, do something for his wife. And as soon as that happened...
it was so sweet.
I was just like, I can respect a man that will stop in the middle of a dungeon online to do something for his wife.
Yeah.
Before, like... that is something strong there. Because I have been in relationships with people that are like, no, I cannot do anything for you because I am in the middle of this and it's online and you do not understand. So, major props to that person. Don't know you in real life, but all right. Anyway, sorry for that little side tangent about Elder Scrolls Online.
That's okay. I was trying to find the guy's name because I remembered what it was called. The dungeon is called Blackheart Haven. It's telling you about the bosses first.
Not all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Shifty Tom!
Shifty Tom, there it is. Shifty Tom.
We were like, yeah, we know Shifty Tom.
We know a Shifty Tom. That I'm all passionately like, it's my father! Hey guys! Oh!
Oh shit, we're not the only ones on this.
There's somebody else on this chat. The guy starts talking to whoever he's working with. Because I guess that guy was also playing with another person. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, trying to talk to that person in the mic, and the other person was just like, I am not turning this mic on for anything.
Yeah, and he was like, Virgil!
Get on the mic! Like,
he was like, your mic's been deactivated, you need to activate your mic.
Virgil did not care about him whatsoever, because as soon as he had to go do something for his wife, Virgil just kept going, and Leah and I are just like, maybe we should stop for a second before we go in?
And then Virgil was already, like, attacking one of the...
bosses.
Yeah.
And we're just like, fuck!
What do we do?
He's straight up... oh my god, what's it called?
Leroy Jenkins!
He just straight up Leroy Jenkins the fuck out of that dungeon for us. Not that we were trying to plan anything, we were trying to be respectful. Yeah.
hey, your buddy's, like, trying to help his wife with something. The other guy was just booked it.
Yeah. And the other guy's like, I'm so sorry, I had to help my wife. And it's like, why are you sorry?
Yeah, that's fine. Like, we're not upset.
Wow, that went on a little side tangent about gaming for a little minute. But
that's fine.
That's okay. Whatevs.
Anyway, folks, and with that,
this is Coffee Table Mythos. We'll catch you next time.